Podium Publishing presents Ascension, Book One of the Trismoon Saga, written by Brian K. Fuller, read by Simon Vance. Prologue. Knight Marshal Vos Athelion stood on a sandy embankment with his back to the sea. An evening breeze rushed past him, cooling the sweat on the back of his neck. The ocean's gusty breath strengthened and headed inland, dissipating the fog of war just enough for him to see the moon Triss, now but a sliver, hanging low above the tree line with its companion moons, Min and Duum. Vos kept one hand on his sword, and with the other fingered the three training stones around his neck, stones that had made him a warrior without peer, a warrior with a sacred purpose that had failed. The Church of the One had commissioned him to find and protect the man and woman prophesied to bring God back into the world, but it was too late. The prophecy had failed, and the moon was eclipsing, signalling the end of all things. Death had come for the world, and he and his weary men waited for it now. The humid wind carried the reek of the corpse-strewn battlefield into the dense forest before them. They had sheltered in the trees and held strong against their enemies for nearly a month. But as every fortress and hiding place had before, their defences did not last. For 2 weeks the enemy had driven the Night Marshal's army through the dense wood until at last there was no land left between advancing death and the restless sea. Refugees from the countless cities they had passed through on their retreat lined the beach behind them, huddling around fires and comforting each other with empty words. Vos glanced back at his wife, who cradled his 5-year-old son in her lap. He had said some of those empty words himself. Months of brutal defeat had extinguished their hope for survival. Vos and his men no longer fought for the cause of victory or under the banner of any country. They fought to visit what revenge they could upon a relentless foe, and to die before witnessing the monsters tear through their ranks and kill those they loved. They had held the beachhead for 2 days, and if they survived the inevitable evening assault, it would be 3.
"I think I hear them,"
whispered Captain York, standing to his left. Vos squinted and attuned his ears. Uyumark were hard to see in the daytime, much more so in their hiding places, in the creaking, shadowy bowls at evening. Vos most often heard the enemy advance before he saw them. His soldiers shifted nervously, hands on weapons, standing as quietly as men in armour can manage to catch any sign of attackers they could feel but not yet see. To a man they were dirty and bloody, armour dented and mismatched, veterans all. Vos commanded them at their request. Few of the senior officers of Rugoth had survived the slaughter as the armies of men scattered in every direction, ragged and routed. The hissing of arrows filled the air.
"Get behind the embankment!"
he yelled, but too late to spare at least 15 men dropped by the keen eyes and heavy longbows of Uyumark archers just out of sight in the foliage. Vos's men had killed most of the enemy's archers a week ago in daytime raids, just for the purpose of preventing such attacks. Since then only the lanky, athletic warriors and squat bashers had faced them in their daily skirmishes. The return of the archers implied a grim reality. The armies of Mikik were being reinforced. Vos considered the Uyumark archers the deadliest of that race's kind. Their master bred them to pull bows no human or elf could draw, and the long, heavy arrows ripped through horses and thick armour with savage efficiency. The Night Marshal had watched archers dismantle more than one cavalry charge to a horse before the knights who rode them could advance halfway across the field. Arrows streaked close overhead to keep them trapped behind the embankment, and as he expected, the sound of thrashing branches rose above the din as the Uyumark bashers and warriors raced out of their cover in the woods. Vos held his hand up, waiting for the rumble of footfalls to approach more closely. He didn't want to order his men over the embankment too prematurely to be butchered by the archers, nor did he want to move too late and lose the advantage of their crude fortification. But as abruptly as the charge from the forest had started, It stopped. No arrows. No charging feet.
What trick is this?
Perhaps they wish to lure us over to be meat for the bows. The Uyumark thumped their chests or the nearby trees in their strange staccato language. Bewildered, Voss ascended the embankment and peeked over. To a creature, the Uyumark stood in the clearing between the wood and the beach. Their backs were turned toward their human enemies, and their multi-eyed faces watched the sky. They slapped themselves furiously, heedless of the men behind them. Voss saw an advantage. If they could fall upon them while they were distracted, they might just survive the day. He turned toward his men to order an advance, but they too had cast their eyes to the heavens. Voss followed their gaze to the sky. The moon Triss had completely eclipsed, the sign given for the end of the world. A deep rumbling and shaking threw Voss backward down the embankment. The ground heaved, and the screaming of his people joined the thumping of their enemies until a deep rending sound drowned out every other noise. The earth on the other side of the embankment tore away, hurtling into space. Blue sky faded, instantly dissolving to reveal a mass of swirling stars and enormous shards of their shattering world careening through the void. Voss struggled to his hands and knees, trying to crawl to the beach and his family, only to be thrown down by an overpowering vertigo. He could not get his bearing to stand, stomach roiling. The training stones had not prepared him for this. As the noise of the ground wrenching apart ceased, the moans of pain, cries of terror, and fits of retching swelled into a cacophony of agony. Voss could find strength to do nothing but stare into the ever-changing sky, the stars and shards of the world dancing as if to celebrate the end. Was this his fault? Had he not been diligent enough in his search for the Holy Mother and Father? Voss waited for death. But the shuddering beneath him ceased. The stars and shards stopped wheeling, and the sun, which had entirely disappeared, rose in the west, soaring backward across the sky. It slowed its course and stopped, resuming its slow pace back toward the western horizon. At once the vertigo ceased. Voss rose carefully to his feet, his soldiers and their families struggling to stand as they stared around in wonder. Legs churning, he ascended the earthen embankment and stopped in awe at its summit. The Uyumark, the forest, and the land they defended for 3 days had vanished. At his feet, a chasm dropped an impossible distance into an inky black space filled with stars and chunks of land, some mere rocks, others as large as a country, floating in a loose ring around the sun. Most of the shards were too far away to be glimpsed in detail, a distant caravan of a broken world. Voss's wife and son came to his side and he pulled them close. The world had ended, but they were not dead and did not sleep. The moon Triss, the seat of their dead god's power, had eclipsed, but something had robbed the anticipated destruction of its total victory. Those that could brave the vertigo came to the edge, wonder and hope beaming from their dirty faces. The Uyumark had fallen into the void. Voss's heart pounded, free of the constricting dread that had followed him for months. If he and his army had survived the shattering, then surely others had as well. His son tugged at his chainmail shirt, eyes wide with wonder.
"Can we go home now, father?"
Voss tousled his hair. Their home was floating around in the shards out there somewhere.
"We'll see," Voss said.
He tucked the training stones under his shirt. The army would rest for now, but his mission was not over. The world had not ended. The Holy Mother and Father might still be out there, or yet to be born. If he couldn't find them before death found him, he would pass the stones to another. Then, one day, maybe the world would be whole again.